Critical Thinking Skills for Engineers, Book 1, Analytical Skills, written by Sridhar Ramanathan, narrated by Kat Lukuba. Introduction. We live in times when facts, claims, opinions, and even data are vying for our attention, ultimately aiming to drive us to some desired action. To purchase something, go somewhere, vote for someone, experience something, build something, etc. If we're not careful, we are acting on someone else's best interests, not necessarily our own. If you are an engineer or in a technical field, then critical thinking is all the more important for delivering the most effective and potentially novel breakthrough solution you can. In this book series, we explore the key aspects of critical thinking: analytical skills, data analysis, interpretation, judgment, questioning evidence, recognizing similarities and differences, creativity, communication, and skepticism. In this first book, we delve into analytical skills, the ability to examine something carefully, whether it is a problem, a set of data, or text. People with analytical skills can examine information and then understand what it means and what it represents. And that aptitude allows for much richer, better solutions to real-world challenges. Let's start now with the elements of analytical thinking. Asking thoughtful questions. Charles Kettering, the head of research for GM, once said, "A problem well stated is half solved." Therefore, it's critical to ask the right questions, so you focus engineers and staff on solving the right problems. Let's use an example to explore how to frame thoughtful questions. A smartphone manufacturer's marketing department tells their VP of engineering that consumers complain they have to recharge their phones way too often. She asks her team, "How can we increase the battery capacity by 25%? Before engineers leap to answer that question, it's helpful to first ask why it's important to increase battery capacity. You'll soon find that the real need is actually reduced time between charges, and that certainly one way to achieve that is by increasing battery capacity. Instead of framing the question so narrowly on battery capacity, the VP might have asked, "How do we extend time between battery recharges by 25%? Engineers and their managers should generate a few more how and why questions that point to possible solutions or even unexpected breakthroughs. For example, why is increasing battery capacity the best solution to reducing recharge times? Why is 25% the right goal versus something even bolder, like 100%? What breakthrough would we have to achieve to double the lifetime? Why are applications and system processes consuming so much power? How should we optimize mobile applications to conserve battery usage? How should we optimize system processes or even defer their activation to save power? How can we encourage users to make small tweaks, such as turning down the brightness, deleting unused apps, etc., that save power? How can we improve the efficiency of the battery itself to hold charges longer? How are other important factors affecting the length of time a battery holds its charge? How can our battery suppliers squeeze out longer storage times? Why couldn't we use the phone itself to generate power, such as maybe a thin solar cell on the back?" As you can see, by dramatically expanding the line of questions beyond just battery capacity, the VP of Engineering is casting a much wider net for capturing potentially more elegant and far-reaching solutions. Tip: ask at least 10 questions, especially starting with why and how when someone presents you with an engineering challenge. Data analysis. InvestorWords offers a good working definition of data analysis as follows. The process of extracting, compiling, and modeling raw data for the purposes of obtaining constructive information that can be applied to formulating conclusions, predicting outcomes, or supporting decisions in business, scientific, and social science settings. Analyzing data really boils down to applying critical thinking to a data set you have to work with. We will focus here on just one key concept: causation versus correlation. Professionals often mistakenly conclude that one factor causes or directly affects another factor. Let's look at two examples. Example 1 shows data points for two data sets over time. The line graph shows both data sets as largely overlapping bell curves with data points that track very closely in each time period, as if occurring simultaneously. What do you conclude from this data? It's clear that the two data sets are highly correlated, but can we prove that the factor in data set 1 is actually causing the figures in data set 2? No, we cannot. It's entirely possible that a third underlying factor is causing data sets 1 and 2 to have this response curve. A real-world example of this factor might be that data set 1 is blood pressure and data set 2 is blood sugar level. Does high blood pressure cause blood sugar to go up or vice versa? Maybe. What if it's actually a cup of coffee that is the underlying cause of both blood pressure and blood sugar going up? To establish causation, we need a clearer smoking gun, such as this example. Example 2 shows the data points of data set 1 rising and then falling in an S-curve. Data set 2 follows the same pattern but shifted later in time, as if the same thing is happening after a delay. As you can see, the factor behind data set 1 is causing an impact in data set 2 with a lag time of about 4 time periods. The shape of the curve is the same, but offsets some time periods. Continuing with the blood pressure example, data set 1 could be the rise of caffeine in the blood system, causing a rise in heart rate and blood pressure shortly after drinking the coffee. As with the previous chapter, the key here is to ask critical questions to test the strength of your conclusions. Tip: test your conclusion by first asking, how do I know this conclusion isn't just correlation versus a causal relationship? What other factors could be behind the data causing the observed results? Information seeking. There's a famous passage in Alice in Wonderland in a dialogue between the Cheshire Cat and Alice, which goes as follows. Cat: where are you going? Alice: which way should I go? Cat: that depends on where you are going. Alice: I don't know. Cat: then it doesn't matter which way you go. This exchange captures the essence of information seeking. Always start with knowing why you are seeking information, the veritable where are you going. Are you seeking information to make a specific decision? Is it to help you build a persuasive case for action? Is it to validate a belief or supposition that you have? Is it to lend additional color, data, or description to an idea? The next step is listing out what information or insight would most inform your decision or action. To help generate possible information sources, let's go back to the example of the smartphone company executives asking the VP of engineering to lengthen battery life. What information should her team seek before building a solution to the problem? Journalists are masters at information seeking because they ask WH questions: who, what, when, where, why, and how. Let's apply the journalist's framework to our VP of Engineering's battery challenge. Who? Which users seem most frustrated with battery life and are most vocal about it, such as mobile professionals? What? Mobile professionals rely so much on their smartphone that they find a midday power loss intolerable. Why? Mobile professionals are too busy and too on the go to charge their phone at work or at any one spot. When? The battery seems to run out of gas around 5 to 6 p.m. after a heavy day's usage. Where? The battery tends to run out during the mobile professionals' late afternoon meetings, at the office or in their car, or during their train, subway, ferry, or plane commutes. How? How might we lengthen the time between charges? See the questions we generated in Chapter 1. Use these questions to gather hard data for later interpretation. The engineering team might then look at three sources of information to answer these questions. People. Interviews of customers, partners, employees, managers, investors, and so on. Documents. Industry publications, analyst reports, research papers, articles, blog posts, user forums, event proceedings, etc. Data. Conduct experiments or test different factors to see the impact on desired outcomes. The third step in information seeking is to build a few stories or use cases that bring these data points together into compelling narratives that point to an action or decision. We won't create the story here, but the questions above have already begun to paint a picture in your mind about why and how extending battery life might be a big win for mobile professionals. Take a look again at the questions we generated in Chapter 1. Note how useful they are in focusing our information collection process to solving the battery life challenge. Remember, we are not yet ready to interpret these stories, vet them, and come to a final decision. Those steps come later in our critical thinking journey. Tip: first articulate why you're seeking information. Then frame a set of WH, who, what, where, when, why, and how questions that focus your information needs and help you develop narratives for later use when informing your decision or action. Interpretation. Once you have a data set, whether it's qualitative or quantitative data, you now have information on which to begin formulating some hypotheses and even a conclusion. This phase is very delicate in decision-making because it's tempting to leap to conclusions that may not, in fact, be valid. One such trap is confirmation bias, the conscious or unconscious preference placed on data that supports a belief, hypothesis, or conclusion you already have in mind. Here's an example of a software company that's growing fast. In this example, revenue is growing about 40% each year as advertising spending is also growing at a similar pace. The VP of marketing might genuinely believe that the rapid growth in revenue was due to aggressive and wise investment in digital social media advertising. This conclusion would certainly make the executive look savvy in the eyes of fellow executives. But what if the company had other data that contradicted this conclusion? What if, on closer inspection of many more variables affecting revenue, the biggest driver of revenue turned out to be a large technology partner that was sending over leads directly to the software company's sales force, and that very few of the deals actually came from the marketing team's digital ad campaigns? Here's an example that might cast doubt on the VP of marketing's claim. In this case, advertising spending is growing at 40% per year, yet the number of leads from digital ad campaigns that actually converted to sale is only growing at 5% per year. Something's wrong. Clearly, another big factor is at work here, one that is not the VP of marketing's ad campaign. This element is confirmation bias. How do you combat confirmation bias? Well, one of the best ways is to ask critical questions. Have I jumped to a premature conclusion? What data might I have that contradicts my conclusion? What hypotheses come to mind as I examine the data? Do I see patterns or trends that deserve deeper examination for underlying causes or possible correlations? Are there outliers or data points that I shouldn't dismiss too quickly, but rather should investigate a little further for a possible surprising insight? What qualitative data should I collect or examine to lend additional perspective to my preliminary interpretations? What quantitative data should I seek to corroborate or refute my initial interpretations? Tip: to avoid confirmation bias, interpret data with the aim of generating rich hypotheses rather than defending a pre-existing belief. Judgment. We take for granted that engineers are using their best judgment when they build airplanes, bridges, dams, buildings, electric grids, and surgical equipment. Poor judgment could result in loss of life, so it's critical engineers hone their judgment skills. How does one develop good judgment? To begin with, judgment is making a considered choice. By considered, we mean weighing in a number of factors, some of which may even be in conflict. Let's look at an example of an engineer in charge of designing an extensive solar panel for a large public high school. What factors should go into the final design? Here are 8 to consider. Costs, both the initial purchase price and the ongoing maintenance costs. Performance, will the solar panel provide the right amount of power throughout the year, even in some occasional peak periods? Reliability, will the panel be trouble-free despite weather effects? Aesthetics, will the panel fit well with the architecture of the school? Ease of installation and repair, will service technicians be able to deploy the panels and make maintenance repairs without difficulty? Vendor reputation, does the manufacturer of the panels have a solid reputation and glowing customer references? Financing, is the solar panel being offered as a lease or as a capital purchase? Which fits better with the school's procurement strategy? Future-proof. Is the solar panel based on technology that will very soon be rendered obsolete by a next-generation capability? Gut feeling. Yes, even emotions have a place in exercising good judgment. Executives often listen to their gut before making a final choice. Note that there is a balance between two extremes. On one end is analysis paralysis, agonizing too much about too many factors for too long. On the other is being impetuous, making a snap judgment based largely on feelings rather than considered thought. Finding the right balance takes time and experience. Tip: the more that is at stake with a judgment, then the more you should consider multiple factors before arriving at a conclusion. Questioning evidence. One of the important dimensions of critical thinking is questioning the evidence upon which to base an engineering decision or action. Let's take a look at an example from astrophysics, where Cecilia Payne-Gaposchkin, a Harvard PhD candidate, questioned the conventional wisdom that the Sun and Earth had similar elemental composition, that is, carbon, oxygen, nitrogen, iron, nickel, etc. In her 1925 doctoral thesis, Payne-Gaposchkin took a more critical look at the spectral data and the relationship between the Sun's temperature and its spectral class to arrive at a startling conclusion. The Sun was a million times more abundant in hydrogen and helium than other elements. While it's not a surprise to us today to know that the Sun is a burning ball of mostly hydrogen gas, it was absolutely not the prevailing wisdom at the time. In fact, her advisor and peers summarily rejected her findings. She was ultimately vindicated 5 years later when another astronomer revisited her conclusions and endorsed them in his own journal article. It took years for the history books to give Payne-Gaposchkin the proper credit she deserved. What we see here is that there's always room for a fresh look at seemingly conventional wisdom based on well-established evidence. A more recent example would be Steve Jobs, questioning the user experience of portable music players and handheld personal digital assistants, PDAs, that were clunky and difficult to use. The evidence at the time would have suggested that the market for such digital devices was limited to a few early adopters and enthusiasts. As we all know in hindsight, Jobs created a multi-billion-dollar smartphone industry, one that even today commands a premium of 50 to 100% over the nearest competitors. A final example of questioning evidence is to look at Salesforce.com, a customer relationship management CRM solution that works by using internet browsers rather than having software licenses installed on servers or on the desktop. Salesforce.com even had a logo with the word software stricken through in red, indicating no software was required to use their CRM solution. At the time, the evidence was overwhelming that enterprises required the use of software licenses for business applications and that cloud-based solutions like Salesforce.com were just too risky and not secure. Again, as hindsight tells us now, the industry was more than ready to adopt a solution that didn't require the cost and complexity of traditional enterprise software to deliver the user benefits possible with an internet browser connected to back-end systems. As an engineer, you'll routinely encounter datasets used to support conventional wisdom. But the truth is, big breakthrough innovations are only possible when questioning such evidence and looking for new insights that others may have missed. Tip: when examining evidence, consider the possibility that a startling new insight lies hidden in the dataset, one just waiting to be revealed by applying a fresh new lens or perspective. Recognizing differences and similarities. Some of the best science and engineering accomplishments come from recognizing something that is different from or out of the ordinary. Let's take a look at another historical example. Stephanie Kwolek was an American chemist. Kwolek worked at DuPont in 1964 when she discovered Kevlar, a polymer that was heat resistant, 5 times stronger than steel, and lighter than fiberglass. At first, Kwolek and her research co-workers thought the polymer was a mistake because they had been looking for a substance that would help tires be stronger and lighter weight. The cloudy solution she created was normally thrown away because it was different from all the other possible tire chemicals. But Stephanie saw that this difference could have very intriguing, important applications. Thankfully, her department head concurred with Stephanie's realization that this substance was important. Soon, Kevlar was commercialized to great success in products ranging from bulletproof vests to tennis racket strings to parachute cables and more. A more recent example of spotting important differences is Atlassian, the collaboration software company founded by two Australian software engineers in 2002. Atlassian is the company that provides software tools such as Jira, Confluence, and Bitbucket so that teams of all sorts can unleash the potential within. The co-founders, Scott Farquhar and Mike Cannon Brooks, set out with only a $10,000 credit card investment to build a software company that would be dedicated to helping teams build great products. While Atlassian is similar to many other enterprise software companies in many ways, the founders chose two important differences. 1. No Atlassian salespeople were necessary because products could be bought off the company website. And 2. Atlassian products would be so easy to use that virtually any team member can get value quickly. Today, Atlassian has a market cap of $25 billion and continues to grow rapidly. What can we learn from Stephanie Kwolek, Scott Farquhar, and Mike Cannon Brooks? The main lesson is that there is power in differences. As an engineer, you will be called on many times to build something that might be similar to what is already on the market. The challenge is to press hard to build something that is unique, different, and individualized from competing solutions. Tip: before setting out to build something, look for what's both similar and different from prevailing solutions. Often, what's different is the factor that will make all the difference in the value of your creation. Skepticism. We covered the importance of questioning evidence in Chapter 6, but let's look at the underlying quality that engineers must embrace when critically examining data and preparing conclusions. Skepticism. Here, we will look at the story of Abraham Walt, a Hungarian mathematician who challenged the conclusions of World War II Navy statisticians. Wald argued that the pattern of bullet holes in aircraft pointed to the need to reinforce metal in certain parts of the craft to improve survivability from gunfire. He was skeptical that this conclusion was the right one. Wald argued that the statisticians were only looking at bullet hole distributions on aircraft that actually survived their missions, rather than the ones that were shot down and therefore not available for inspection. So, he proposed a radical conclusion to the Navy. Shore up the metal on parts of the aircraft where there were no bullet holes. Wald reasoned that if there was a bullet hole in a particular spot, then the plane would have been shot down. As it turned out, he was right. The survival rate of military aircraft went up, and Abraham Wald was heralded as a genius. Another famous example of healthy skepticism is Dr. Richard Feynman, the Nobel Prize-winning physicist who was asked to find the root cause of the NASA Challenger space shuttle catastrophic explosion. Feynman's thorough investigation led to the conclusion that the failure was due to the O-rings used in the solid rocket booster joints. NASA claimed a chance of failure of 1 in 100,000, but Feynman expressed skepticism at such a low number. Through a stunning visual experiment, he showed the true number to be 1 in 100, far from acceptable. NASA has since rewarded engineers for expressing healthy skepticism regarding exuberant claims of safety and reliability. One way to develop a healthy sense of skepticism is to pose a few questions when examining a data set or working on an engineering problem. What is in the intrinsic bias or limitation of the data that might skew my conclusions? For example, note how Abraham Wald was the first to notice that the military data set did not include the aircraft that were shot down. Does the conclusion seem too good to be true, or perhaps based more on beliefs rather than hard evidence? What data or insight might challenge the prevailing wisdom and potentially lead to a breakthrough conclusion or innovation? What would be an unpopular conclusion that might be worth exploring, and then accepting or rejecting depending on the merits of the supporting data? How credible and relevant is the underlying evidence used to base a conclusion? Does the conclusion flow logically from the data? Tip: you can cultivate a healthy skepticism by asking yourself a set of questions when examining data carefully before arriving at preliminary conclusions. Conclusion. I hope you found this audiobook useful in honing your critical thinking skills, not only for engineering, but for life in general. Practice these skills in everyday life, whether it's reading a news article, discussing technical issues at work, or making important life decisions. To recap, I have reviewed a number of key elements to critical thinking, including analyzing data and avoiding the trap of assuming causation when only correlation can be proven. Expanding your line of inquiry when generating solutions for a problem statement. Applying considered judgment when arriving at conclusions. Maintaining a healthy skepticism to push for better solutions. Recognizing important differences that can lead to superior results. In our next book in the series, we turn to communications, how engineers can maximize their impact by communicating and collaborating more effectively in a team context. Thank you for investing your time in this audiobook series. May it help you achieve greater heights of personal contribution, both professionally and personally. About the author. Sridhar Ramanathan has 30 years of experience in technology companies, from startups to blue-chip firms. As managing director and co-founder of Aventi Group, a product marketing agency, he has been instrumental in leading many tech firms through high-growth phases. Prior to Aventi Group, Ramanathan was the marketing executive for Hewlett-Packard's managed services business, where he was responsible for marketing worldwide and managing the portfolio of HP Services' $1.1 billion unit. He also held profit and loss responsibility for electronic messaging outsourcing and e-service business units. Ramanathan holds an MBA from the Wharton School of Business and a BS in Engineering Physics from UC Berkeley. He is active in nonprofit work from Boy Scouts to St. Michael Church Ministries to serving as Vice Chair Emeritus of the Board of Child Advocates of Silicon Valley, an organization that provides stability and hope to abused and neglected children. Ramanathan lives in Livermore, California, with his wife Gina and their four teenage children. This has been Critical Thinking Skills for Engineers, Book 1, Analytical Skills, written by Sridhar Ramanathan, narrated by Kat Lukabaugh.